Welcome to Pod of Orcas. I'm Justin Cox with the Sea Doc Society. This is a story about a 250-pound fish that washed up on Orcas Island's popular Crescent Beach the morning of July 11th, 2023. That fish was a six-foot-long bluefin tuna, a species that had never in history been documented in the inland waters of the Salish Sea. Bluefin is a delicacy that can sell for upward of $200,000 to $300,000, and some have even sold for millions. But why was it here, and how did it die? That day, for me, started with a missed call from Sea Doc Society Science Director Joe Gatos.
Hey, Justin, this is Joe. It's about 8:10, and big-ass 100-pound tuna sitting on East Sound Crescent Beach. Anyway, just wanted to see if I can grab that book from you. I want to look it up. I'll show you some photos, and maybe I'll just swing by. I don't know if you're home. Anyway, give me a call myself. Thanks, man.
I called Joe back while he was leaving that message, and minutes later, we were out in front of my home handing off that book, A Field Guide to Fishes of the Salish Sea. Nearly every interview in this episode, you'll notice, starts with a person in their home making coffee or something and easing into what they thought would be a normal Tuesday. But then they get a call about a fish. You are going to hear from Joe, Sea Doc Society's science director, in just a moment. You'll also hear from a couple of kayakers who witnessed something mysterious in those same waters days earlier. You're going to hear from the fish scientist who ultimately necropsied and studied the fish. And you'll hear from the Orcas Island local who harvested 45 pounds of sushi as it sat on the beach. A quick note before we dive in. These are personal accounts of a mysterious dead fish. It's not science. It does yield some science. But what we're doing here is telling a bunch of stories from a bunch of different perspectives about a mysterious and bizarre moment. That morning unfolded organically, and so does this podcast. Let's start with Joe Gatos, the guy you just heard on that voice message. How does this morning play out for you?
Yeah, so I had a dentist appointment, and but I got up early enough. I like to have coffee with my wife. I like to sit outside, listen to the birds. And so we're having this cup of coffee, and then I see my phone buzz. And I'm like, I'm just going to leave that go. And then I realized it's my friend Mike that I go to exercise class with. He's never called me in my whole life. Like, I see him at class and I'm like, this is really weird. Like, this must be important. I didn't even know he had my phone number. And so I picked up, I said, Julie, I got to take this. I picked up and he was so excited. He's like, Joe, he was excited for Mike. He goes, Joe, there's a really big fish on the beach at Crescent Beach. Cause he walks from his house to exercise class and back. Yeah. I didn't go that morning cause I had the dentist appointment. And he goes, you got to check it out. I was like, okay, thanks, man. And then I hung up and I looked at Julie and I was trying to decide, do I just stay here and honor this moment with my wife? And I was like, I got to go. the fifth grader kicked in and I'm like, I got to go see this. And so I really had no idea what to expect. So I'm still kind of in my running shorts, my t-shirt, and maybe I can't remember if I had flip-flops on or tennis shoes, but I got down there and I was like, whoa, I am so happy I am here. I felt okay once I arrived. Like, I made the right decision.
So you're there. This day is also the day a book comes out that you wrote a book review about. You wrote the review, which is wonderful and people should check out. I published it. And so I had a copy of this book. So right. You make a phone call to me. What's that?
Right. So we're sitting there and I'm talking with this guy, Jay, and I'm like, it's definitely a tuna, but is it a bluefin? It's gotta be an albacore. How could this be a bluefin? And then I thought, you know what? Justin has that book. He doesn't live far from here. I just need to run over and get that book. And I'll just look it up to see, because I'm sure it's in the book. It has 260 fish of the Salish Sea and it just came out today. And so that's I jump in the car. I think I called you.
Big ass 100-pound tuna sitting on East Sound Crescent Beach.
You were with the kids, right? What were you doing?
I missed your first call, then called you right back. And then was like, yeah, I'll meet you outside and do it. And then talked about how you got the call from Mike about the fish. When you got there and I give you the book, it was sort of like the slow process of it going from, okay, there's a fish on the beach to we should go see this thing. Like, we need to go see this thing. So you left. And as you went down the street with the book, an exhaustive list of fishes of the Salish Sea, yeah. I was like, Noah, you want to go? And so Noah hops in the car and we follow and meet you over there.
I love it. I love it. And so I made a detour after that because I thought, I got to get this fish. It's not in the book. And so by that time I had texted Adam Summers and sent him a picture and he said, that's a bluefin tuna. And then when I saw, oh, it's not in the book, I knew that this was something big.
Right.
And so I spun by. My brother-in-law was staying at my mother-in-law's cabin right outside of town. So I thought, oh, this is really close. I'm just going to go by. I'm going to get some big contractor size trash bags so we can bag this thing up and put it in the car for Adam. And it was funny. I run into there and they're sitting around having coffee too. And everyone's just starting their day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you want to see a tuna? And they're like, what? I'm like, yes or no, you got 30 seconds. Do you want to see the tuna? And so they did the same thing that I did, the same thing that you did. They're like, yeah, okay, great. And so he and a friend of his from California just jump in the car and we're driving towards Crescent Beach. And he's like, what are we going to see?
Right.
So just, you know, so all of us had just kind of gone on the whim of somebody else and their excitement. Yeah. And then I showed up and I think you were there by the time I got there.
And then, I mean, by the time we got there, there was some of the fish had been harvested, which is another.
Yeah. It was so funny because, you know, Josh Brown, a friend of mine, shows up and he walks across the street out of his car with a knife. He's definitely coming to harvest some of this fish. And I was like, I don't know. You know, we have no idea why this thing died. We have no idea what kind of condition it is. He's like, I'm getting some of this meat. And I'm like, Josh, let's just hold off and see what we'll figure out what's going on. And so by the time you and I got there, he had taken a 50-pound fillet off of the side, that whole longissimus dorsi muscle, the primo sashimi right. of the bluefin. He had already had it in a bag.
Just a meticulous cut of that thing.
Yeah, it's so funny.
So then you jam from there. You're there all the way up until minutes before your dentist appointment. You jam there.
I got to roll.
We roll to West Sound, drop the fish there, which Josh also had a gurney of sorts. You leave that moment. What are you thinking about with it? Like, what questions does it make you ask? What does it, I don't know, everything from the scientist in you to the human being who's excited about animals. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. No, the first thing I'm thinking is that book is obsolete. The day the book hits the shelf, they've missed one of the fishes of the Sailor Sea, or as complete as it is.
It's so, either an absolutely brutal turn events or the best marketing for a fish of the Sailor Sea thing imaginable.
Exactly. I've got to know what these other 260 fish species exactly. are. And so then you start thinking, like, tuna, like, what is going on? So everyone starts thinking, you know, ocean temperatures are increasing. Species are shifting. Plants are migrating north. Not that they can move, but the seeds and everything, the birds are migrating north. Ocean temperatures are warming. We know that we are at the precipice of change from this, you know, climate change. But I'm a scientist. I can't say from one fish, oh, this is climate change. It's just right. one fish.
Right.
Could have got lost, right? People are saying, oh, somebody dumped it off the boat. I'm like, really? Do you think they don't? That's a very expensive fish
exactly.
to you know, prank somebody by leaving on the beach. And then yes. plus the underside was a little bit, you know, scarred and bloody. So I think, you know, just my quick analysis was that thing probably died on the beach where it was rubbing the sand
right.
underneath of there. But and then after that comes this fascination that you think you know everything, right? You just reviewed a book that has 260 species, the definitive book of the Salish Sea. You know, you're in awe by the diversity. And then you're like, wait, it's still changing. There's always something new happening. I love that feeling.
I love hearing you talk about that because, yeah, it's a sort of the ocean is huge. To think we have it all kind of understood.
Right.
And not to compare these two species or trends or what they mean or anything like that. But like we were on the boat with the Seattle Times like a week or two ago talking about how when you came here and were starting the Sea Dog Society, you didn't see humpback whales here. And then yeah. to go from not seeing them and really nobody seeing them to like the tangible moment of like seeing that just like that right. shifts things for you, right?
Right. And it just makes me wonder, okay, 10 years from now, Noah will be out of the house, maybe in college or whatever. And he's going to say, I remember seeing the first bluefin tuna. We didn't have those when I was a kid. And I was just like, I love this. I love how the cycle just keeps going on and on, you know, and keeps you guessing all the time.
Absolutely. That is totally going to stick with Noah, because he was, I mean, Noah in reality watched us carry a 6-foot World War II gurney that had a draining trail of blood behind it down a dock, you know.
That's a college essay right there.
I know, you know, I know.
He could write so much about that, you know.
And he wrote a little sign that said like "Fish for Scientists" with a happy face on it, and Adam has that still. They have that there. They love it. So good. It just was, yeah, like you said, like one fish on one beach is not science, but it's a fish we haven't seen in the inland waters like that on a beach, right? That is, you know, that's, it's super fascinating.
And did we just got a, I think, an email, like I copied you on a couple of days ago, where, you know, some people from NOAA, they're seeing some mola mola, which occurs, but it's also rare. But I don't know if they're seeing more and more of them, but, you know, some of the NOAA scientists are also thinking like, this has to be due with ocean warming. And then Justin, just, I haven't even got to talk with you about this, but on Saturday, I was back in your stomping ground, south of Monterey. I was actually in Monterey Bay in Carmel for a wedding. And so, you know, all my friends love animals like we do. And so the day before the wedding, we all go out on a whale watch boat, and Monterey Bay, which should be as cold as the Salish Sea right now, you know, in the 50s, mid to low 50s, was 67 degrees. And we saw a megapod of common dolphins, like, I don't know, 1,000 at least common dolphins.
My God.
Spread everywhere. And and they said, yeah, since the hurricane came through, the ocean temperatures warmed by, you know, over 10 degrees. And these dolphins that you would see off of San Diego are now up in Monterey. And I'm like, the ocean is changing, right?
Wild,
here.
Very wild. Yeah, no, I went to college in Monterey and launched a failed surfing hobby in that water. Definitely was not that temperature when I was there.
Yeah, it's not San Diego for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling me that day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so cool. I'm so glad. I feel like we should have a text chain so I can just text everybody at work when something like that goes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
My call's Kat, Erica. I mean,
it's true, but I mean, honestly, I think you were jamming to it, to a dentist appointment, and I had that book. It was I had that book. It was good.
Yeah, and I still made it to the dentist appointment and didn't smell too much like fish. So everything worked out for me.
I had someone ask me the other day about the tuna, saying, is that why downtown all smelled like fish that day? That tuna on the beach, that one very fresh fish, is that why?
I don't think so.
It's so good. It's so funny. All right, cool, Joe. Well, thank you.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you in about 3 hours or something like that.
Beautiful. So later that day, I posted some photos and a video clip of the bluefin on the Sea Doc Society Instagram page, which you should follow. We didn't know much, so the post didn't say much. The gist was basically, whoa, look at this big fish. But the video cut through the algorithm and went way beyond our core audience. And what followed was a wave of news coverage, starting with a post by Northwest Sportsman, who had some local sources on the beach that morning, and then broadcast, print, and online media throughout the Pacific Northwest picked it up. But nearly a week before that, two local kayakers witnessed something ripping back and forth along the tidal waters of that same exact shoreline. They saw this creature two nights in a row, and it left them perplexed. Once the story of the tuna spread, they reached out with an email. Here are Gene Agapoff and Hugh Everett. Where were you? What were you doing? And what did you see?
It was about 6 p.m. on the 4th of July. We often go kayaking after dinner. We headed out from Crescent Beach, and along Ship Bay Bluff, there was another kayaker in about a 10-foot length boat. And she was being surrounded by an animal swimming back and forth about 40 feet in an arc back and forth. And it was a very strong swimmer, not like anything we'd ever seen before. It had a wake about 10 feet long, and it swam around her. So I yelled over, you know, what is this? And she said, I think it might be a minke whale. It has no dorsal fin. So because we heard marine mammal, we just continued on our kayak down to the hatchery. And for that night, that's all we saw, was just this extremely bizarre swimming pattern. up and down the bluff.
And then, and so at that point you ask someone, they speculate maybe a minke whale. It's, that's amazing that it had like a visible wake like that. So then you said you went out again the following night. Is that correct?
We did. And that night we didn't see it until we returned about 8 or 8:15 at night. And we're coming back to the beach, and it was swimming along the beach on the east side of Crescent Beach. The same thing, about a 40-foot arc back and forth, really made me feel like it was an animal pacing in a pen or something. And so I kind of got a little bit closer to it, and it had a head that was creating a, you know, bulb of water, sort of the size of a volleyball. And same thing, big wake, obviously not like any seal or river otter that we usually see.
And so in the hang time between like July 5th and July 11th, when this animal washes up, did you think we probably saw a minke whale, or did you think, what was that? Did you not think about it? And then the story came up and you pieced together. How did these things kind of come together and become one?
I went down to the beach several other nights thereafter, but it was always windy. So we did not kayak. The water was rough. I looked for it and I didn't see it. I kept thinking about it. Yeah, never saw it there until Tuesday morning. We were driving to the ferry and we saw the body.
You sound like you kayak often. What's your experience with like kayaking, nature observation, thinking about the species you're seeing? What's your sort of like, whether professionally or just as hobbyists, experience with that kind of thing?
Well, like you, I took the marine naturalist training course at the Whale Museum. So we're really into, you know, looking for animals and trying to identify who's eating what out there.
This was a fun fact we discovered along the way, right? Is that we took that class together the same year?
Yeah.
That's so good. Can you describe a little further the, like, when you say in an arc or like pacing, like, can you describe the shape of what you mean by that a little more, like in terms of how this animal was moving?
Yeah, it was following the beach line very closely both nights. And it would turn very narrowly and go right along the edge again, turn after about 40 feet and go along. It obviously wasn't feeding. Anything else would have, any prey would have left the area. It was like it was trapped.
So, and the other thing I can say about it is it seemed to be lunging. That is to say, it would rest for a bit, and then it would make a big wake for 40 or 50 feet, and then it would rest and maybe turn around and then give another wake or just make the same wake again. But it would go in pushes. It was not a smooth swimming animal.
Interesting. And so like those times, it would take that rest and then it would lunge back like at a high speed again?
Yes, where a high speed is not real high, but just like driving a boat a little bit.
Because if, I mean, I think this is something we've thought about. These are big like open ocean fish. Like the image that comes to my mind is like a thing that ran into a dead end on a maze or something like that. Could it feel something like that? Like that's what Crescent Beach was in this case, maybe?
That's what it kind of felt like, yeah.
Was at any point in there until the story of the bluefin tuna, was that a tuna?
No possibility at all. Didn't consider it.
No. It would have surprised me to have, I mean, we see salmon jumping this time of year. We'll start seeing them jumping in the water, but no, this was not a salmon-sized critter. This was big.
Yeah, this was whale-sized, small whale-sized.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew what it wasn't, but the idea of knowing what it was...
Had no clue.
What a bizarre experience. So when that, did you see it on the beach before then, like the stories and everything came out on it? Like, what was your story that morning with seeing it?
Well, we were driving to the ferry. I saw two people taking photos of it, and I saw enough of the animal to know that that's what we had seen. But we did not stop. We had to get in line for the ferry.
Well, again, this is not going to answer anything conclusively and scientifically this episode, but I'm not a scientist. I'm a communications person and a journalist, and the idea of being able to piece all the little pieces we do have together to know as much as we can possibly know and put color to it and everything like that. I so appreciate you all sending me that message and sharing that experience, because it's the only one I've talked to of people talking about it prior to death, you know?
Well, sure.
And it's true that we can't say anything conclusively like, yep, that absolutely 100% was the animal. We know that by some kind of proof and evidence, but like, it's the same spot.
Yeah.
And it's about as close as you're going to get to it, you know?
Yeah.
Something about that fish pacing in that kind of way over the span of 5 days is just can kind of, it's like distressing a little bit.
Yeah, it is. I don't think there was much for it to eat, you know, something that size. I don't know. It was so agitated. It was spending a lot of energy that it should have been spending heading south or getting something to eat.
Yeah, yeah. It's evolved for a different kind of hunting and finding food and everything, whereas the seal is going to be a master at doing what it needs to do there in that.
Yeah.
Well, this, I again, really thank you for reaching out to help round out this story. And we're lucky to have you both out on the water observing and everything. Now we return to the beach on the morning of July 11th. As Joe mentioned, part of the tuna was harvested, which we'll get to shortly, but the fish itself was delivered to Friday Harbor Labs within hours for further study. Adam Summers is a fish expert at the University of Washington's Friday Harbor Labs, which is about a 20-minute boat ride from Orcas Island. Adam's lab conducted the necropsy on the tuna, which is basically an autopsy, except on an animal, if that's a new word for you. In this conversation, you'll hear Adam reference a few visuals. Check the show notes after you finish the full episode if you want to see some of those. We'll also share them in our monthly newsletter, which you can subscribe to at seadocsociety.org. But you don't need the pictures for this conversation, just sharing that because you're going to hear him reference sharing his screen once or twice. Here is Adam Summers. The day that this fish washes up on Crescent Beach on Orcas Island, how does that start for you? Did you hear from Joe? How did you hear about
yes,
this?
Yes, yeah, no, exactly. I was actually working at home, and I got a text from Joe asking me if this was an albacore, and he had a picture. And I mean, my thought was, if that's your foot, that's not an albacore, because his foot was, you know, probably an eighth, tenth of the length of the fish I was looking at. And photos are difficult, you know, because you can force perspective on them and things, but it was very clear this wasn't an albacore tuna. This was a bluefin tuna. And so I said, no, I mean, that's a bluefin tuna. And Joe said, do you want it? And I was like, yes, absolutely. I want the bluefin tuna. And so at that point, I think he went to go get some help. At that point, the tuna was in just beautiful shape. I mean, absolutely lovely condition. And he went to go grab the gear to move it to someplace where I could get it. And then he sent me a text saying, well, a local grabbed a knife and cut off a quarter of the tuna's flesh to eat. And I said, holy mackerel, but we don't know what killed this thing. And he said, no, I know. I told him that I was a vet and I wouldn't eat that meat. And, you know, we've subsequently learned that the guy was just fine. In fact, the flesh was just fine. This was a grand adventure, but at that moment we had no idea what exactly had caused a bluefin tuna to be probably 150 or 200 miles from where we expect to see a bluefin tuna. So that was, it started out as a big mystery.
As that played out, I actually went back to the site with Joe at the second trip. So I wasn't there until it was the fish had been cut part away, but it was a fascinating thing to have happen because it was like, almost as seamlessly as that all played out, the person who took some flesh from the fish helped load it up on a gurney and bring it to West Sound. There was sort of like an unspoken negotiation of like,
yeah,
I'll be eating this portion. The rest will be studied.
The rest is for science.
It was an interesting thing to watch play out. But yeah, no, what you were just about to say. So we took the trip down to West Sound Dock, me, my 10-year-old kid and all that stuff. What then plays out for you? You guys came over on a boat and picked it up. So
you took it to the West Sound Dock and that's great. I mean, that's perfectly accessible for us. Although it was found just next to the Orcas Airport, right? So the East Sound Airport is, you know, across from the beach where it was found. And that would have actually been more convenient for me because I have a plane and I could have fit the carcass in the airplane. And so it would have been on the island much more quickly. had I thought to say to Joe, hey, bring the thing to the airport and just leave it there.
Honestly, that just would have been a whole other thing to make this story even cooler.
I know. Well, it's going to fly. The carcass is now defleshed and it's going to fly down to the Burke Museum. So it will be accessioned into the Burke Museum collection and it'll get its airplane ride. But I sent out a quick Discord message to the folks who hang around in my lab and said, I'm heading in, I'm grabbing a boat, I'm going to go over to East Sound to get what looks to me like a 6-foot long bluefin tuna that would be the first in the Salish Sea. And by the time I got there, 6 minutes later, the folks in my lab had assembled six, seven people to come over with me. So we all threw on life jackets, signed on a boat, and blasted over to the West Sound dock. And you guys had it all laid out with a big orange cadaver bag and everything. And I mean, it said on it, this is for scientists, don't touch. We took a picture of the note. It was so cute.
That note was done by my kid. It's scientists.
It was clear that it was done by your kid and it was great. Everybody loved it. So we put the fish on the boat and started driving back. And as we were driving, that was when I got sort of the first indication that this was an incredibly fresh animal, right? Because I couldn't see the fish still. I mean,
right.
I just had this carcass wrapped up and it started bleeding and it was absolutely fresh arterial red blood. And it was a typical experience when you've just boated a tuna and you see this blood coming out. So I knew that we weren't going to be opening up a, 4 or 5 day old animal. This was going to be a pretty recent death. So we got to the lab, we had plenty of bodies to get it up onto the dock and then bring it up to my lab. And let me just see if I can find you some pictures and I'll share this screen so you can see it. It was just a magnificent experience and what a great animal.
It's so beautiful. And yeah, that on that like handheld gurney with the cover on it, the fish is so big, you look pretty suspicious walking that.
These are six folks who were in my lab, Cassandra Donatelli, Olivia and RC and Meg and Sherelle and Carly. And they're sitting and standing around the body. And then this is the sign, which is pretty awesome. So we're really glad that was done by your son. It's just fabulous.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
How are these young scientists? How they feel about the whole thing?
My gosh, we were all totally excited. There's the blood running out the back of the fish, and you don't have uncoagulated blood in an animal that's not super fresh. So there's my at that time 11-year-old, and he's helping to pull the animal free. And so this is our first glimpse of this tuna, and this whole crowd that gathered, it was such a lucky event, because we had my whole lab, which was, I guess, 14 or so people, but then a group of high school students who were marine biologists also stopped by. And so this is the woman who was in charge of them, and she runs this Salish Sea Sciences program, and she was there with all of her students. Then we decided we'd better hang it up and get some measurements and things off it. So
what did the length and weight turn out to be?
Yeah, so it was 200 pounds without that chunk of meat.
Whoa.
Probably a 245, 250 pound animal. And it was 6 feet long.
Wow.
There's the animal with the fillet missing. And it was a very good butchering job. I mean, the guy did an excellent job. So I had these pictures, I tweeted them out. And the coolest thing was at that point, the world's expert on bluefin tuna, Barbara Block, got on the phone and told me about the animal, because I said I thought this might be the first record in Washington. She said, no, we see them all the time in Washington. There aren't museum records, but there's lots of fisherman records from offshore when that warm patch forms. Folks know to go, 40, 50 miles offshore and they'll catch bluefin. There's two size classes. They catch sort of little ones, 10 to 30 pounds. And then there's the occasional very big one. And she said that is a large class of fish working its way up from Southern California, and they're headed to Japan eventually. So she says this looks like an 8-year-old fish, which means it's been on this side of the Pacific for quite a while. And she asked for some tissue for isotopes, which we got, and asked for some sizes. We did not take the otoliths because we took the whole skeleton, and we will preserve it and then dry it and then carefully drill them out so it doesn't destroy the whole skull.
Amazing.
Yeah, that'll give us exact age, actually.
Very cool. I want to ask in a second. Yeah. I want to ask in a second just about how the what the necropsy process looks like, or what you look for, and things like that. But did Barbara say anything about why a fish like that might be here? Did she have any thoughts around that?
Well, no. You know, we know that they're offshore, and in other parts of the world, bluefin will occasionally end up in, you know, narrow straits, and it causes fatalities, right? So bluefin are just not, they are not wired to understand about tides. They're not really even wired to understand about shoreline. And so a bluefin, and you know, this may have been, they at this point in their life, they're traveling in small schools, 4 to 6 or 8 animals. The whole school may have ended up in the Salish Sea, coming in, you know, through the straits of Juan de Fuca. And then once it started down between Vancouver Island and the Olympic Peninsula, that animal, I mean, that could have been like a 4 or 5 hour trip. These are fast swimmers. Yeah. And so very, very, very rapidly, they could have ended up in the San Juan Islands and then been just completely puzzled because the water flow patterns are strange because of the tides. There's extra fresh water because of the Fraser River. There's all sorts of things that would have been confusing and disorienting. And so it was no great surprise when Joe passed along some information from folks on Orcas who had seen it while sea kayaking the day before and the day before that. And there was just basically a big panicked fish zipping back and forth across East Sound, which is for them, I mean, that's just nothing. That's a 30-second trip from one edge of East Sound to the other end, and just not finding a way out. And eventually, what we determined from particles, gravel and sand in the gills and in the mouth, eventually just making a bad choice about where to be in the Sound as the East Sound as the tide dropped, and so it beached itself. Basically, the fish was in perfect condition. There were no bruises. There were no issues with the internal organs, but the gills were full of sand and gravel. And the very, very fresh blood convinces us that this animal died just before the tide started dropping. And so it was exposed right after it had died, within hours of it having died, because the blood hadn't coagulated. And so I then went right after the initial weighing and things, I put the animal in a freezer because I had to go to a meeting. So I went to the meeting of American Society of Ichthyologists and Herpetologists. And there I met another tuna expert, a guy named Bruce Collette at the U.S. National Museum. And I showed him the pictures and he was just blown away because they, you know, yes, they're known from Washington. In fact, there's some really cool records from Washington from native fishers and midden piles. And so there's vertebrae that show they were catching the big bluefin tuna, not just the little ones. And there's even an oral history report from a macaw site where a fellow explains that his grandfather, who had never seen one, told him how to catch them if they ever came back. And so, you know, this was a well-known food source for the native peoples in the Northwest, in the Pacific Northwest. But that's on the outer coast.
Right.
There's not even an anecdotal report of one of these things in the Salish Sea. They're not in the exhaustive guide to the fishes of the Salish Sea from Ted Peach and Jay Orr. It's just not a fish that we see here. And that's because its appearance is pretty stochastic and incredibly fortunate that we actually managed to find the animal, right? I mean, there's lots of places it could have stranded and we never would have seen it. And it's also possible it could have come in, swum around, and then managed to find its way out.
Right. I mean, it stranded itself. It stranded itself on sort of the quintessential iconic beach of Orcas Island. You know, it's like smack dab in the middle of this beautiful.
People are going to see it right away. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it sat there for a week, the eagles would have eaten the flesh. You know, it would have been not great. So I told Bruce Collette that, you know, I was looking forward to getting home and defrosting it and doing a necropsy and throwing, you know, I said, I was a little sad to be throwing away all that flesh. And he said, you're going to do what? And I said, well, I was just going to toss the meat in the water. We don't know how it died. I mean, it could be bad. He's like, that fish is dead fresh. Do not throw that flesh away. And so it turned out that some of the students, while we were doing the necropsy, were actually eating raw tuna. I mean, it was fabulous meat. So it did not go to waste.
Amazing.
We got a lot of scientific data out of it. So this is Dr. Carly Cohen, who's interested in fish teeth, and she's already figured out a replacement rate for bluefin tuna, which was totally unknown. She got that by looking through all of these teeth.
What's a replacement rate like?
Oh, so, you know, typically, we actually published a paper a few years ago on ling cod that were saying they were replacing 10 teeth a day. So it'd be the equivalent of you replacing one a day. Every morning you'd wake up and one new tooth would have appeared in your mouth. So
my God.
It would make orthodontia quite different, right? So this is Cassandra Donatelli, who's an engineering professor at Chapman. And she's dissecting the posterior oblique tendons of the fish because she's interested in locomotion. And she found the most beautiful tendons. This is some of the cheek scalation. This I think also is Cassandra. Let me see if I've got a little movie of it moving. It's kind of, so this is the cheek scalation. And this is just showing.
Wow.
How those overlapping scales protect the head. So lots of great science came out of it. It was a great outreach thing because we had, you know, tons and tons of students hanging around helping.
You talked about the exhaustive fishes of the Salish Sea book. Does having a fish like this here and studied and everything like that mean it is among the fishes of the Salish Sea or a fish that simply got lost? What's the distinction you make there?
I don't. I didn't participate in the book. Or the checklist. I think that probably it would not end up being added to the checklist, except maybe as an accidental, you know, like a bird that is not meant to be where it is. You wouldn't really think of this as a Maine as a place for stellar sea eagle, but there's been one there for 5 or 6 months last year. Right. So there's just their vagrants, their kind of thing that shouldn't show up, but occasionally does. So if it were me, I wouldn't add it to the list of Salish sea fish. It's just not, going to be repeated in my lifetime, I don't think so.
I mean, it's fascinating, right? Because it could not be repeated or it could be a little sign of something that then does repeat itself in 5, 10 years or whatever. I mean, who knows anything? But I think that's
part of
what's so fascinating about this story for people is that it just makes you ask questions, whether you're asking yourself questions about the behavior of the fish and what happened, eating it, what's happening in the climate. Like you're just a litany of questions you then ask yourself because there's just this beautiful, fresh 250-pound tuna on Crescent Beach, Orcas Island, never happened before. Wild.
Exactly.
So it'll go to the Burke Museum. What will that be? What will that look like?
We will pack it up and fly it down to the Burke, where it will go into a Burke freezer until there's room in the bug colony. And then the remainder of the flesh will be eaten by beetles, and the entire skeleton will be accessioned in to the Burke. And it'll be the first bluefin tuna in the Burke Museum that's local caught. So that's really pretty cool.
Incredible. Well,
yeah, as far as I could tell, it's the first museum specimen of a bluefin tuna from the state of Washington in the country. So,
well, stay in touch about that stuff and I'll stay in touch
about
this. I think it's also so fascinating and so glad we're so glad that handoff all happened and
I'm
everything.
Very happy that Joe thought of me.
Of course he thought of you.
It was magnificent. Take care.
Thank you, Adam. If you'd like some more Adam Summers, you should search Awesome Fishes of the Intertidal on YouTube and watch that episode of Salish Sea Wild. Fun fact, he also helped advise Pixar on the movements of fish in the movie Finding Nemo. Pretty cool. Up next, we have Josh Brown, who not only harvested the tuna while it was on Crescent Beach, but he also offered up his truck, his old-fashioned gurney, and his time to transfer the bluefin to Orcas Island's West Sound dock, where Adam picked it up and brought it to his lab. I'm going to take a moment to really set this one up. As that bluefin post on social media started to really pop off, I kept hearing about it in real-life conversations here on Orcas Island as well. Yes, people had eaten the tuna. No, they hadn't gotten sick. Yes, it was delicious. I heard about social gatherings where the tuna was kind of at the center of it, although I never talked to anyone who actually went to one or had eaten it personally. I did all of those interviews you just heard in the span of 1 week, and by that Friday, I really wanted to talk to Josh. And we were now 2 months removed from the day the tuna showed up, and I had just talked to the Salish Sea's resident fish expert about the fact that the tuna was healthy and normal. All of which is to say, I was maybe a little bit hesitantly ready to try the tuna myself. I DM'd Josh on a Friday afternoon, and 40 minutes later, I was in his dining room with a couple of Sapporos, having this conversation into an iPhone as a DIY microphone. When I showed up, Josh was in the final stages of slicing the tuna and preparing a truly beautiful plate of nigiri. The following conversation takes place over that meal. The sound quality is good, but you're going to hear our plates. You might hear some wasabi in our sinuses once or twice. You'll definitely hear his dog, Poncho, who was a really good boy, but he chimes in a couple times. And you will hear about why he made the call to harvest the fish and what he did with it in the days, weeks, and months after. Here is my conversation with Josh Brown over a plate of sushi on a Friday afternoon.
It's like 6:30 in the morning, and my phone goes off. My friend Bob sent me, or he called. He doesn't usually call, especially that time in the morning. I'm like, oh, you know, what's going on? Is there an emergency or something?
Right.
And he goes, you're not going to believe this. He didn't say it was a bluefin. He said there's a giant tuna washed up on the beach, at Crescent Beach. And I was like, yeah, cool, Bob. Thanks. I'm not that hungry, but, you know, because I'm imagining, you know, it's been there a while or something, and but it's just like this giant dead fish on the beach, which it kind of was. But he goes, thing is, it looks perfect, he says. it just looks perfect. And I said, just, you know, why don't you send me a picture? So he sent me a picture of it. And by the time I get the picture, I'm already up out of bed and getting coffee. I looked at the picture and I said, I'll be right down.
You can tell.
I'll be right there. Mm-hmm. So I went outside and I loaded up I had a World War II Army stretcher, you know, that I just got a couple weeks before at a yard sale, that it was a, like, take that please kind of thing. It goes with your fire truck, you know. So I loaded that onto the truck, and I had the special hangers that it goes on. And then I had some knives, some big knives outside. I got the biggest fillet knife I could find. And then I had a tarp and a plastic, like a sailing bag that holds wet gear and stuff. You know, it's a heavy-duty bag. So I loaded that all in the truck, and I just jumped on down there. I was down there by like 7:15 or something. And Joe was there, and Jay Longfellow was there, and he's taking pictures. And I go, wow, it looks like a bluefin, you know? And then Jay starts looking it up on his phone. He starts matching the characteristics, and there's a bunch of guys standing around him. And he says, God, by God, it is a bluefin, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, I thought so. And then I said, it hasn't been here long. I said, look at the eye on it. It's like, it's totally fresh.
What would the eye look like if it wasn't fresh?
It starts clouding up. It gets really milky.
Okay.
And it doesn't, you don't see the, like the white around it. It starts all filling in like white.
Yeah.
Like a dog with cataracts or something.
Right.
And so it starts, and you'll also see if it had been there even for any much length of time, the first thing that happens is the birds come down and peck the eyes out. That's the first thing they go for, because that's about all they can take.
For sure. Right, yeah, you know? We've seen it in baby harbor seals,
yeah,
and all that.
They take out to go up for the eye. So I knew it hadn't been there long. So I started joking about it. I said, well, I brought my fillet knife and I got a stretcher. Let's load this thing up, you know? And Joe goes, well, your veterinarian doesn't recommend you eat that, you know? I said, well, good thing I'm not a veterinary patient, you know? And so everybody was kind of mingling around in their groups and everybody else kind of left and Joe left and they were, everybody said that, well, Jay said he was going to go get his wildlife cam and set it up and watch the birds go after it, you know? And I was like, well, he's runs off to go get his camera. And it was me and Brandon Brown were standing around down there and everybody else had left.
Joe came to my house and grabbed a like fish of the Salish Sea identification.
Right.
See if it's in the book.
You know, he wanted a little more, you know, scientific evidence of what it was.
Right.
And so he was gone for, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 minutes or something. And Brandon and I just went, well, I'm taking some of this. And we might as well make it easier for the birds if we're going to leave it. So, but I'm taking the top this quarter and I wanted to get the other one, you know?
Yeah.
And so I cut off like, it was probably about 45 pounds of it.
Right.
In the bag, and I put that in the bag, and I was gonna start working on the other lower portion of it, and Joe kind of comes out of nowhere and taps me on the shoulder. He's like, Josh, do you mind if we you know, take that back to the labs? He says, Friday Harbor Labs, they want it. He says, they've never seen one in the Salish Sea before. And I'm like, you know, light science.
I know.
And so, you know, I said, well, I can keep this, right? And he's, oh, yeah, you can keep that.
I really loved it. It was like sort of a human thing that was like, this fish is here. This part of this fish has been cut away.
Mm-hmm.
This scientist is interested in studying this fish. It's never been found here.
Yeah.
There was some sort of like silent communal, like, next thing you know, you have your World War II gurney out on the beach.
Yeah, well, I told
you. You still have your fish. You say you're going to weigh the fish. Like, you weighed the fish and sent that back for part of the study stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I called in and told him I weighed all the parts when I got them over here before I started trimming them, you know, with the skin still on. I actually saved the skin until, like, I don't know, a week ago, I finally gave up on trying to dry it. I don't know what I did wrong, but it wasn't really happening for me. So I had Kyler saw what I was doing, and he came over, and he's like, let's process that, you know. So out in my, I have this little stainless steel, like food, it's like a vending cart or whatever, but it's like an outdoor kitchen, but it's all stainless steel. So we got some pans, and we got our scale, and we weighed all the parts, and then we washed everything, and we chopped it, you know, like started trimming it and cutting it into pieces that we could put in the vacuum bag.
Yeah.
And then we put them in portions where we could, you know, have enough to. And
I should say real quick, as someone who showed up on that beach after the cuts having happened, they were so like, you've definitely cut a lot of fish in your life, right? It seems like it was like so clean and immaculately done. And then it's also funny to think, like, just to like understand this tuna, like, you took one part of one side and it was 45, 50 pounds. Like, this, you came away with a lot of fish, but wasn't even, is a fraction of what was on.
Right. I mean, we could have got a lot more. I would say that, you know, because when they rolled it over, we showed on the back side, the beach side. Poncho. On the part that was laying on the beach, it had been flopping around there, and there was some bruising on that side of the fish. And I figured, well, all the blood would have pooled lower, so I figured the top part was the best.
Right.
The two halves. And when I cut into it, it was still warm. They're a warm-blooded fish.
Shit.
And so it was still warm and it still bled. So the blood hadn't even congealed yet. And that's unusual. Like in the fish, if you get one, you know, in Mexico or whatever, that's done. The bleeding's done pretty much.
Scientist at Friday Harbor Lab said the same thing, that he hadn't even seen it yet. He put the gurney on the boat. As they drove the boat away, he watched the blood drain from it. It was like, study hadn't even happened yet, but observationally it was like, oh man, that's fresh.
Yeah, when I opened it up, so that it bled profusely. But when we were taking it down to the West Sound County dock, I had the gurney, so the two guys were in front.
I was one of those guys.
Where you went, yeah, remember? And then, so we took it down there, and all the blood started spilling out of the bags that we'd put it around, you know? Yeah. And when I drove away, there was people over on the county dock, or on the yacht club dock, and they looked at us like we had just brought a murder victim put it on the dock. And as I drove away, they looked at us, and the guy came up, and he says, shouldn't you guys be doing that at night? I said, hey, man, my truck's really visible. I got to get out of here before somebody recognizes it, you know? And I'm sure they went down on the dock and checked it out, you know, to, like, the heck it was.
It was very suspicious. I mean, it was a literal trail of blood behind something 6 feet long and 200 pounds.
I know. It's on over, you know, in a plastic bag down at the end of the dock on a gurney, you know.
Crazy.
Like, nobody knew what it was.
I know. No. So we put it down there, like, which, by the way, like, because Joe's story is he gets a call, he comes, you're there with him at the beginning, he comes over, gets this book from my house and stops somewhere else real quick, comes back over, the whole conversation about moving it to West Sound to get it to Friday Harbor Labs, and you had harvested some of the fish, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
He then is like minutes away from a dentist appointment starting.
Oh, right.
So he goes to a dentist appointment, I go with you to West Sound, it gets picked up. It goes off to the lab there. Let's pick back up where you were processing it and stuff like
that. So I came back here. I had one little stop to make. I had to go rattle somebody's door. And then I came back here and just, that wasn't what I planned to do in the morning, you know. But I knew it needed to be done now. I'm like, well, it just had to happen. Poncho.
Yeah.
And so I just went into processing and getting it cold. The first thing I had to do was break it down into a pan. I've got some pictures. I think I showed you those pictures of it where I got it all into a pan and then put it in the fridge to get it chilling right away while I got the rest of the gear ready for put it in the vacuum bags and all this stuff. And then Kyle came over and we just processed it all up. And
so it goes in the vacuum bags? Do you freeze or what happens?
Yeah, immediately you want to freeze it and you want to get it as cold as possible for like 3 days at least before so you start doing sushi.
So you went about that process.
Yeah.
There was no like in this process with Tyler hacking away a piece and giving it a bite?
No, we didn't eat any of it until we froze it for 3 days.
Is that sort of like even if a fish is fresh, not freezing it could pose its dangers?
Well, the whole reason you would freeze it like that is in case it had any parasite,
right,
like any worms. And that's the big danger with sushi. But, I mean, when you go to the fish market in Taiwan or in Tokyo or wherever, those fish come in frozen. They're never fresh. When people get sick from the fish or parasites from the fish, it's when some local guy's gone out and caught it, brought it home, and done that, you know, process it and then just eaten it. That's when you're in more of a danger of getting a parasite.
So you assess the situation, decide, taking some of this fish, bring some of the fish home, go about it, still go about this process of like 3 days of freezing and everything like that.
Yeah.
What about when you decide, going to invite people over, going to eat this? How did others feel about that? How do you feel about that? How did that whole thing play out? Because it sounds like you had some like basically some festive communal stuff around.
Oh yeah, there's some guys building the house next door that are, you know, he's from North Carolina or something. He used to do bluefin fishing off the East Coast, and so I, you know, they're renting an RV from me while they're building the house, and so I took some of it over there to them. And gave it to him to make some seared tuna steaks.
Wow!
And so I gave him two pieces of it, and then that's when I tried it the first time. After I gave it to them, I take it out of the freezer and thawed it out, and then took it over to him, and he, you know, put some mild spice on it, whatever. I usually put sesame seeds on it, and then sear it real fast in a pan. But he did it on the grill. On a charcoal grill, and it was fabulous.
Cool. And I said, well, if you guys don't die, I'm probably going to be
so,
fine.
So they had it first.
I let them try it out first. I did one little bite, you know, but I let them, you know, have it. And I said, well, if you live, then I guess it'll be all right to eat.
I'll be honest with you, two days removed from the fish on the beach, I'm probably not sitting here with you now, but
right.
I know there's a trail of people ahead of me. What kind of stuff have you made?
Oh, well.
We're done with it.
I did some really good seared steaks. Tuna steaks.
It's so good.
Isn't it fabulous? Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
And literally, it's easy to thaw out. You know, I just took that out, and you just throw it in a pan of water in the vacuum bags for like, while I took a shower.
Right.
When you called, or when you said you were going to come over and you wanted to try some, I was like, okay. So I took, by the way,
people, was 40 minutes ago, 40 minutes before I got here.
And I took it out of the freezer, bought it out while I made the rice, took a shower, and bada bing, here we are.
You know?
And it just thaws out so quickly.
I think part of the fascination based on just like sharing it. I mean, this is like the kind of thing that like, we shared it via our, like, I do communications for Sea Doc Society. Mm. We shared it through our channels. There's not a bunch of information on it. This fish is not a fish that you see in the inland waters here. Like, so it just kind of makes you ponder a bunch of questions about, like, like, why, how, everything like that. But then there's this added thing that this fish, which also has been shown on a lot of, like, widely watched TV shows and stuff, is extremely expensive.
Right.
Like, how cognizant are you of the cost, like, the delicacy?
What is the worth of it? Like,
the delicacy, the worth, not the worth as you cut it away and everything, but just, like, that's definitely part of the fascination with it, you know?
Well, it is, and this, it varies wildly, I think, with the grade of tuna. You know, in the right market, in the right conditions, the right fish, professional buyer, professional cutter, sushi chef, restaurants, and this was probably well over $100,000 fish.
Crazy.
In the right market.
Right.
I would say definitely over $100,000, upwards maybe of two. If it were caught that size, taken
exactly,
in the right moment to the right market. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous Amazing. Fish. But I can't compare it to that because, you know,
it's a mysterious fish found on a beach.
Yeah, and, you know, there would be some questions, you know, like, where'd you get this? You know?
A funny thing, for sure. A funny thing was that there were questions even at the moment, and I don't know if you heard this kind of thing, but sort of like,
did it fall off a boat?
Was this placed there? Yeah, was it off a boat? Was it all this? Like, well, that's a pretty wild choice. That's a lot of, you're basically throwing a bunch of money away. Well, that's not in anyone's interest.
Punch it! Knock it off.
Here's a fun one. That the next day, because I was there and like shared about it and everything like that.
Yeah.
The next day, people telling me that like Mojitas here on Orcas Island are serving a tuna dish. Things like that. Did you ever hear anything like this?
No. Yeah. I mean, the speculation goes wild, you know, whatever.
You didn't go around the island?
No, I didn't. I didn't go sell it or anything.
The circumstances that put that fish there and everything else that plays out after, that's to deposit that there and for the fish to find its way here, for it to be that fresh in that moment. And like that has been confirmed by necropsy and stuff like that's a healthy, fresh fish that just died.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's crazy.
Well, and I think kind of the caveat for me is that I didn't need a necropsy to figure that out. It's just experience tells you what. I mean, I've seen, like, I've been to Mexico and had the tuna just, like, run right up on the beach.
Right.
And the wave leaves it there, and the next wave's going to take it, and my Mexican friend will just run it down there, and he grabs the thing and hauls it up. He's like, and we ate it, you know.
That's amazing. I think it's simultaneously beautiful that you don't need the necropsy, but also science does need the necropsy.
Sure. No, I think it was great.
But also, in my own weird way, and I'm speaking on behalf of Justin right now specifically, you were kind of part of the necropsy in a weird way. You were here with the fish eating it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then, so I would like just get like island scuttlebutt type stuff of like,
yeah,
people been eating the fish, people no one's eating, sick, no one's dead. Sick. No. To me, those are data points for me, you know?
I mean, I feel terrible, but the thing was, I was thoroughly tested before I let anybody else have it. You know, I mean, I let those guys have it, but you know,
I think every bit of
I wasn't worried about it. When I cut it, I knew it was fine.
I think you'll enjoy this whole. I think this whole story is so cool, and I thank you for participating in it.
Absolutely,
thanks,
it was
Josh.
Fun. Yeah.
There you go. Was this a one-off situation? Just a lost fish? Or is this a species we might start seeing around here? Who knows? If you enjoyed that story, head to seadocsociety.org/newsletter or hit the link in the description of this show. We send one newsletter every month. No spam. Whole lot of storytelling. If you liked this, you'll like that. We will be sharing visuals from this story in that space and on our social media accounts. If it's your first time hearing this podcast, you should subscribe, maybe tell a friend, and go check out season one, which is a 7-episode run all about southern resident killer whales. Big thanks to Joe Gatos, Gene Agapoff, Hugh Everett, Adam Summers, and Josh Brown for taking the time to talk to me. I really enjoyed having all of those conversations and kind of like stitching all of this together. The music for this show is made by Poddington Bear. I'm Justin Cox, and if you'd like to reach me, you can send me an email at jcox@ucdavis.edu. And finally, here is Noah Cox, who came with me to the beach that morning and helped us transfer the fish to the West Sound dock, where he made the Fish for Scientists sign that was pretty vital to the whole operation. Take it away, Noah.
Thank you for listening to Pod of Orcas, and thank you for supporting the Sea Doc Society. Bye!
Did you want to try some of that tuna?
No.
The Sea Doc Society is a donor-funded program of the Karen C. Dreyer Wildlife Health Center, which is part of the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. If you'd like to support our work, you can go to seadocsociety.org/donate.